Welcome, gang, to Season 2, Episode 1 of The Lonely TARDIS, your podcast about all things Doctor Who. I am Dolly Domofsky, and joining me, as always, is...
Oh, I'm introducing myself. Hi, I'm Sean Norton. Good to see you, or talk to you again.
Maybe you can see them. Maybe you have Dalek eyes somewhere.
I wasn't sure I was getting the intro. Usually you just say my name and I'm like, hello. But you know what? Season 2, doing things a little different. Play it fast, play it loose. I like it. Keep us on our toes.
Play it fast, play it loose. That's how we do things around here on The Lonely TARDIS. Well, we are back because guess what? There's a new season of Doctor Who. I know we took a little bit of a hiatus there since Christmas.
Lord, yeah, it has been since Christmas.
It was January.
Yeah, we did try. We tried to do some of the older episodes, and then, as it often does, life gets in the way, and then there's just...
No news.
Without that inspiration of every week of New Who, it just was tough. It was really tough.
Luckily, now we have a lot of shows that are going to be happening in a row, and then I think to take a break somewhere around mid-season, which just happens to be right around the holidays, and then they pick back up right after the holidays, so I think... That's the schedule.
Which is fine, because I'm going to need a break, because I'm pretty sure I'm going to cry my eyes out anyway. But we can get to that.
Yeah, so. We'll get to that. We'll cross that bridge when over those ponds when we get to that. this past weekend was the first episode of Season 7 of the newest Doctor Who. A lot happened this episode. You know, can we do a quick recap maybe of how the last season ended? How season 6, so there was the, and I'm not talking about the Christmas episode, I'm talking about the pond episode, or I'm sorry, was it the wedding of the Doctor, the Doctor gets married?
Yeah, the Doctor's wedding. Yeah, no, I mean, those Christmas episodes always feel so, isolated on their own anyway. So there were nods to the continuity, but it really, because it was a standalone thing. So,
oddly enough, I think this one had a little bit more baked into it continuity-wise. We'll get to that. Let's do a quick recap.
So anyway, the wedding.
The wedding. The Doctor gets married to River Song, also known as Melody Pond, I think it was.
Yes.
Child of the Ponds. And then fakes his own death. To save everybody, and the internet explodes in hateful, I guess, plot anti-worship. What's the opposite of worship besides hate? Maybe it's hate. Who knows?
It pretty much is hate. Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, you find that kind of vocal minority where, I mean, well, maybe it's not a minority depending on who you talk to, but those people really hate things. We actually, and I recommend if people haven't listened to it or haven't heard us in a while, definitely go back and listen to that really, really big. Kind of post season 6 breakdown that we did, which I'm really proud of. I liked that a lot when we had it with Justin and Steven and everybody else, and really kind of go into like everything that the season had promised, what it delivered, what it didn't, and where we felt things were going to go from there.
Yep.
And then, you know, that's a great way to catch up. But of course, if you don't want to do that, then Dolly kind of summed it up from where we are now. So
yeah, that for those that are asking, that is episode 7 of The Lonely TARDIS in season 1. So way back in October of last year, October 5th, almost a year ago, Doctor Who ended, and now we're actually starting a brand new season of Doctor Who.
I was very jazzed. I remember I was very jazzed at the end of that season. I had a lot of different – I had mixed emotions. I had mixed emotions as we left the Doctor behind.
And, yep.
And the revelations with River and I mean, they had set up that very act in the very first 5 minutes of the season, which I think was back in April or May.
Yeah.
And then they finally paid it off in October, and we all wondered how they were going to do it. And we found out, of course, in the last 30 seconds with the Tesseract or whatever, Tesseract or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
And I just remember we went back and forth, and a lot of fans did. You know, I'm sure people are still doing it. And just the kind of reaction to that was pretty intense. But you know what? That's kind of what's great about this show too, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you get such passionate fans and you get such amazing depth of character and story and reactions from people that it's something you talk about. I mean, we still talk about it. I was talking about it last week with a buddy of mine who was trying to get caught up on the show, and we talked about the ending of that season, and it's just incredible. It's incredible how it carries on, and here we are beginning season 7.
Yes, exactly. So this season kind of kicked off with was it called Pond Life?
Yes.
So there were a series of online kind of mini web episodes. There's five of them that kind of showed the Doctor coming back and visiting the Ponds over the course of over the course of 5 or 6 months. Essentially, from April or May up until August, up until today, which is kind of interesting, once a month. But I think it actually tied in a little bit to that Christmas episode, because remember at the end of that Christmas episode, the Doctor sheds a tear, his first ever. He's actually kind of touched that the Ponds, as a couple, always save the spot for him. So I think he started to kind of accept them almost as family. You know, Rory and Amy were almost family to him. So he decided, I'm going to continually check up on these folks. I know I should probably leave them alone because bad things usually happen to my companions, but I'm gonna stay in touch. I'm gonna visit them often. I mean, they've been super important over these last 2 years to the Doctor's life, and so or in our time, it was probably 900 plus years for the Doctor.
About 200, yeah.
Yeah, and so I think I actually think that had something to do with it, but I actually. It was kind of interesting how Pond life ended. So, I mean, obviously we're going to have plenty of spoilers, but the Pond life was that it was five mini episodes, maybe about a minute and a half to 2 minutes long each. And they actually have the full compendium, or the omnibus, I think is what they're calling it, where they're all linked together online on BBC's website, on YouTube. And it shows the Doctor checking in on them, always having some, filling them in on some of the harebrained adventures that he had been on. And it kind of ends on a really sad note, I guess, or a down note, because the Doctor makes his kind of last phone call to the Ponds, and nobody answers. Usually he would call them and then stop in, but nobody answers, so he leaves a voicemail. I think he leaves a voicemail, doesn't he?
Sort of.
And because usually the Ponds kind of answer his call together. This time there was no answer. The next shot shows Amy at home by herself.
It's interesting, right? Mm-hmm, So a couple things. So they only showed these in the week leading up to the show. They were about a minute each. And they kind of showed, like you said, where they knew he wasn't dead, obviously, because of the end of season six when they talked to River and everything. So, the end of Christmas special, he comes in and they save the play for him. Because you never know when he's going to pop
right,
up.
Exactly.
And you could tell it was still fresh for them and they were fine always setting a play for him because mm-hmm. you never know. But with Pond Life, you can tell that they're kind of tired of it. They're getting a little frustrated, you know. They delete his messages. They're not, they don't listen to him or anything like that. They toast to him still, but they're mm-hmm. they just seem kind of burnt out.
Yeah.
And then you've got, the second episode where he shows up and goes crazy and then realizes that he's too early and none of the stuff that I'm guessing we'll see in season seven has actually happened to them yet. So, there's reasons why, Then they find an Ood on their toilet.
Which is fantastic. Yes.
And then, and the Ood is just helping them around and all that with the whatever. it's a very interesting segue from where we were last season to where, the Doctor kind of forced them to leave because they're always in danger and he didn't want to be responsible for that anymore mm-hmm. to, this balance of, well, he obviously needs them, but he's only trying to kind of check in on them. And they're kind of growing out of this state of being these companions that really want to be with him all the time. And they're kind of tired of the antics. They're tired of getting, thrown around and him showing up randomly and whatever. And you could tell that they're trying to lead their own lives and then they're having some serious problems with that. And that segue
it's almost
much right into, the first episode with the end of Pond Life Part 5.
Mm-hmm.
Some big problems in the Pond household.
Yeah, which is interesting because they'd always, they had that kind of playful negativity towards each other. And then there was that actual, the Ponds did, I should say, as any couple does. Then there was that actual episode where, I guess it was that alternate reality episode where Amy was a superstar model. Do you remember that? I think it was from that season five, was it?
Well, that's how it is now. I mean, that's what she does.
But that's how how it is now, right? So right. I think that what's interesting is how they're starting to tie some of that stuff back into that season. So Amy and – what?
Huh? No, I was just – I'm trying to think of what you're referring to back to season five.
I think it was season five.
She was a kissogram. I don't remember if she was
No. So there was the – I want to say it was towards the end of the season where, you know, the doctor travels to, it was the one where he had, who's his buddy? With the Cyberman, the guy who had the kid.
Craig.
Yeah, Craig. I think he was helping out Craig and, so he's in a mall and he sees Amy and Rory walking by and, Amy,
That was season six when we saw Craig the second time, and instead of going and talking to Amy, you could tell he didn't want to. But that's where their lives were after he left them alone. She obviously became a very successful, you know, model. Sure, sure. It wasn't. I don't think that's an alternate reality.
Okay,
I think
so that was referring to.
And you're right in terms of continuity. But what you're referring to is that's what they established at the end of the sixth season as the lives that he was leaving them to lead. You know.
Yeah.
And we don't know what Rory does day to day. I'm guessing after 2,000 years of guarding a box, he's probably a pretty good security guard somewhere. But
and he does manage to make
Amy's
a point about
now,
that.
And there's some serious marital strife in the Pond household. And I'm going to go on record as saying that in spite of some really often odd character decisions and writing throughout the series, I'm a huge fan of the Ponds. I'm a big, big fan of Amy.
Yep.
And I'm a huge fan of Rory's. So the fact that these guys are in trouble, you know, it makes me a little sad.
Right, and we never really find out why they're in trouble. The only explanation they give is, sometimes things just don't always work out. Sometimes the doctor can't fix everything.
Right, right? Which is kind of it. But thankfully, the first episode, which we'll discuss in a minute, we finally get a little bit of background on what Moffat's been hinting at all summer and what the Pond life really kind of led up to. So
you say it led up to. I still think it was almost kind of a rushed start, right?
Well, it's tough. I mean, they left so much.
Yeah.
There's a huge gap for us, you know? There's a huge gap for the viewer where the last time we left them, he left them a house and they were fine and they were happy and they were trying to get over all the crazy stuff that happened to them at Demon's Run and all the other Doctor's adventures. So now there's this gap in time, which who knows how long it is, 6 months, a year, 2 years. They may have even mentioned it, I don't know, but where they've lived these lives, but clearly something has driven them apart. And it's tough for us to go from instantly seeing them happy and happily ever after to now the next season they're just basically wrecked. And they're not living together and they're filing for divorce and everything. So I can see why you think it's rushed. But without having some sort of story in between, really no other way to do it. So I kind of appreciate what they were doing with Pond Life. I just wish they could have shown a little more than 5 minutes of it.
Yeah, and I think that's maybe what I was leading up to is that I really wish they could have shown more of – especially those last kind of crucial why things – or show more of that – kind of falling apart, because you never really see them distressed at all during Pond Life. You see them as kind of playful with the doctor and oh, it's the crazy doctor on his journeys. And then there's just that one episode, that final last minute where everything has gone wrong. But I think it's how season 7 picks up, which is obviously, as you're saying, they're planning on getting divorced. So you're never really eased into it. It's a real kind of big shock, I guess, to all of us, right? It's only been a month since they decided to get divorced in their time, because it was July they were happy, and August they didn't answer the phone call. So
yeah, but we don't know that, do we? We don't know when and where.
When you look at the compendium,
don't we? Oh yeah, we, you're right. Never mind. Because of the little. Yes, you're right. Really that short?
It was that short, and that's why I think maybe it was. That's why I kind of felt that it was a little rushed, just to make sure they brought out all the viewers up to date with the plot lines of the episode. And now I did like that twist. I actually did like the twist of them being separated and things not happening the way they were planning. I almost thought though that it was, unlike them to be so hateful towards each other, because they were really negative towards each other. And you never really saw that, in the past couple seasons. Cause, you know, to me, Rory was always this. Wow, what show am I watching? Rory was always this kind of, I don't want to say bumbling sidekick, but he wasn't the brightest, the brightest bulb on top of the TARDIS, I guess you could say.
I don't know if it was a question of intelligence, and it was just more of a kind of a laid back, not really stand up kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So he would be, regulated to the background early on.
Sure.
Sorry, continue.
No, I think that's it. He wasn't, he wasn't the foreground. He wasn't the leader. He was kind of in the background, much more laid back, kind of let things happen. And in the case here, he's very aggressive towards making sure that You know, Amy signs the paperwork. He doesn't want to be around her, and Amy doesn't want to be around him. I mean, you do see those hints of them still having feelings for each other, but you kind of wonder how things fell apart so fast within that month or month and a half of their time. So, maybe they'll actually get resolved this season. We don't know. It might all loop back again. But what does happen in this episode? Doctor shows up, and he's kind of zipped away. Actually, he doesn't show up. He's tricked into he actually somehow gets captured by a Dalek cyborg, which is, I think, this is the first time we've actually seen these Daleks within human bodies, right?
Well, yeah. So what they do, they reference it in the episode, is what they do is they use these nanobots or nanogenes or whatever, which is actually apparently a throwback. I didn't realize this until I did a little episode research, that these little these little nanogenes are actually the same ones. Do you remember The Empty Child way back when Eccleston was around?
Yep.
And they were, they were basically creating these gas masks on people's faces. Supposedly, it's the same kind of tech. So what the Daleks are doing is actually converting humans and making them into these weird Dalek drone things and controlling their minds and stuff. So it's not necessarily – and bringing them into what we found out was their hive mind. So it's not necessarily it's kind of like a weird Dalek conversion process, I guess. So they're still human, but their minds, I guess, are wiped until they need memories and stuff like that. I don't know. It's weird. But it's a neat little twist, I guess. Reminds me a little bit of – well, we can get to what it reminds me of. But – yes, so he doesn't actually show up like he normally does. Nope. He's tricked.
He's tricked to go to Skaro, essentially. Someone with a hooded messenger lets him know that there's a woman that's trying to find her daughter, and her daughter is captured by the Daleks. And Doctor shows up on Skaro and says, kind of starts putting two and two together and says, you are something's not quite right here, and eventually deduces that she's essentially this puppet, this Dalek puppet, who's, again, retained some of her memory as a human, but at some point she fully becomes a Dalek Borg. And then, the subsequent scenes show she zaps him and he, gets taken away. Subsequent scenes show similar things happening to Rory and to Amy as they get captured as well by the Daleks. Now, all of us might say, why didn't the Daleks just kill all three of them? Because they've been trying to kill the Doctor for millennia, millions of years, essentially, billions of years. It turns out that the Daleks want the Doctor to save them, which is kind of interesting. But the way they do it is, or how they want it to happen, is actually even more interesting. And that's because Dr. Rory and Amy are zoomed into what's known as the Dalek Parliament. The Parliament, just giant, auditorium, this room filled with Daleks, all pointing their weapons to the Doctor. They ask him, hey, we need help. The Dalek Asylum seems like it's about to break loose, and all the evil Daleks, the ones that are worse than the Daleks we've come to know, are about to,
break loose.
About to break loose, right? And so
Daleks be crazy.
Yep. They can't. They don't want to engage with them themselves. They don't want to kill these these other Daleks themselves because they think pure evil and hatred is beautiful. And so that's why they hire the Doctor, the person that they hate the most, which is kind of interesting because it's a cyclical beauty for them is to hire. I don't say hire, but almost kidnap the person they hate the most, where all their hatred comes from, and have him take care of these creations, which have even more hatred than the originals do. So they kind of find this whole process beautiful.
You've got crazy Dalek, Planet Penitentiary down there, right? And the shield somehow comes down because some ship, or may come down because some ship accidentally crash lands. And if that can happen, then that means the Daleks can get back up. And if those kind of crazy, insane old Daleks get out, then the whole universe, including the Daleks themselves, are just, doomed. So it's interesting that there were a lot of nods to Doctor Who history, you know, finding him, not
Yes.
believing he was dead, even though the whole universe did.
Mm-hmm.
It's a nice touch for them to pick up Amy and Rory, because the Doctor has to have a companion. You know, he does better when he has his companions around, which of course we all know is true. But I thought it was funny. I was talking to some people, and they said it was good that the Daleks managed to find the right companions for the right Doctor at the right time. Because it's a good thing they weren't going through time and finding, you know, Ace or Rose or anybody like that, because then who knows what would have happened.
Yeah, exactly. The Pertwee doctor is the one they were actually looking for.
But what I really liked, and I'm sorry,
No, go
but
ahead.
what I really liked, and they did this throughout the whole episode, you have this mysterious woman on the planet, right? And nobody can figure out how she survives down there, even though it's ominous from the very beginning. And the Doctor, and I like it, the very first question he asks, because she's making these souffles in order to keep, you know, sane and keep the Daleks out or whatever. And he asks her straight up, how do you do that? How do you, you're trapped on a Dalek planet.
Where do you get the milk from?
Where do you get the milk and the eggs from? And so she's kind of like, yeah, I'm resourceful, whatever. She ducks the question, and it, you know, obviously that'll come back. But I like that that was foreshadowing from the very
Yes.
beginning. That was a nice touch. I also really liked that they pretty much instantly, not changed up, but added that layer of marital strife to the doctor companion dynamic, where he's walking around the room and you could tell not only like he's kind of worried about this hundreds of thousands of Daleks pointing their guns at him, but he's even more, arguably more worried about the fact that something is very wrong with Amy and Rory, just by the way they're standing and everything. And then Amy breaks it down and says, you know, ooh, you know, they're staying apart and this is something the doctor can't fix. Now he's going to fix his bow tie and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah,
And
the
it really
way.
just, it set the, between the massive, massive amount of Daleks, between the Doctor, Amy and Rory on the teleport pad, between the, like, everything was just set up so fantastic in those first 10 minutes that it just set the tone for what really, in my opinion, was a pretty powerful, not perfect, but pretty powerful episode and a good start to the season. Plus, it was really cool to see Skaro, which is where
Yes.
the episode opened,
Well,
when
it
it was
was
all
the
burnt and
ruins.
destroyed from the last
Yeah.
time they all fought there, which was just awesome. That was just an awesome touch.
You know, I find it interesting. You brought up the point about Amy, you know, telling the doctor he can't fix it. She narrates what he's gonna do. Oh, now he's gonna fix his bow tie. Now he's gonna flip his hair over. Now he's gonna pull up his jacket. She knew ahead of time what he was planning on doing, because she's basically figured him out, and she knows that, hey, you know, DW, you can fix a lot of things, but you can't fix this. You know, and you don't, I don't think that's ever been told to the doctor before. You can't fix love. Yeah, you can fix time, you can fix space, you can fix the physical aspects of things going wrong, but you can't fix the emotional stuff. I even think she mentions emotion as one of those things that he can't fix. But and obviously the doctor has had love in his life, but the way he's dealt with others in love has been kind of an interesting adventure each time. So, you know, the doctor is asked to shut off the music that's being played by Oswin Oswald, who's this the woman, this girl who's her spaceship, the Alaska, has crash landed onto you know, the asylum. And so the Daleks give the Doctor and Amy and Rory the nanogene bracelets. Remember that? So essentially, these bracelets keep the nanogenes away, you know, off the body to prevent the being from turning into one of the puppets, the Daleks. Essentially, yeah, I think it essentially does become a Dalek. And so, Dr. Amy Rory all crash land at different points on the planet or on Asylum, and kind of make their way around, find each other. They hunt down Oswin Oswald, they kind of go through the process of, you know, she lets them know she wants to escape, she needs help escaping. Meanwhile, the Daleks in the asylum they're coming back to life. They'd all been turned off for a while, but they're starting to come back to life and get very aggressive. And so Doctor and Amy and Rory are juggling all these kind of three aspects, this triforce of you know, things they have to accomplish before they're truly able to escape. And then the key point, which all of this kind of encircles, gets right back down to Oswin Oswald. And the doctor finally meets her face to face, or we think it's face to face because she's been looking at him through a round camera, let's just say, for the longest time frame.
Yeah, all these different cameras.
All these different cameras, and
she's very practical. Like, she has a lot of, I mean, whiz bang experience, you know. And he, even the doctor, you can tell he's putting it together as the episode goes on, and she's doing all this amazing stuff, opening doors and communicating with him. She can see him, but he can't see her. And you can tell it's building up in his head, even if it's not 100% in ours.
She was able to hack into the Dalek network very easily. She doesn't explain how; just says, "I was able to do it."
Yeah. And then, I mean, I don't know if we want to just go right into a whole.
I say let's just go into it.
Just jump right down into that and summarize and then go back. Yes. Because I know if we do that, we'll gloss over a lot of stuff. But
yeah, that's
all right. Just cut to the end, good long story short, and then we'll go back to some of the stuff we really liked.
So the doctor bumps into Oswin finally after going through this maze of the asylum, finds her alone in a room. He says he's staring right at her. She says that she's looking at him through a camera while she's sitting on this nice plush couch with a wireless keyboard. And then he finally lays it on her and says, he basically says, you don't have a nanogene bracelet. You are actually a Dalek. And she says, no, I'm a human. I'm Oswin Oswald. And the interesting the way they kind of showed this happen was, as he explains it to her, and she keeps saying over and over again, I'm a human, the camera's kind of slowly turning, and in fact is a Dalek there in front of him, with, you know, still has the, is still part human inside, but has essentially converted into a Dalek. She finally comes to grips with this realization that she's not really human. She's only got the last few, you know, vestiges of humanity within her personality before she finally completely turns into a Dalek and becomes this evil creation, and decides to help the Doctor, Amy, and Rory escape, and so on and so forth. They teleport off the planet, surprisingly into the TARDIS, because the Doctor said, I think he even makes a point of noting that he's really good at aiming teleportation and stuff, and so that's they escape after that. the one really interesting point that I liked at the very end of this episode was in total callback to the season 6 finale. In this case, the Dalek Parliament, their question to him as he's kind of zooming off in the TARDIS is, he says, they said, how can you do it? And he says, I'm the Doctor. And they say, Doctor who? Doctor who? So the entire Dalek Parliament is screaming at him, Doctor who? So it was a really kind of cool, almost powerful, yet interesting scene, because I think it's definitely a foreshadowing of things that we're going to be seeing the rest of the season, the themes for this season where people are I'm going to go right in. I think the season if we don't find out the answer to the question, Doctor Who, I think regardless, that's going to be the main theme throughout this year. The Doctor's past, who he is, how he became the Doctor, and so forth. I think we're going to, discover a lot of that this season.
Well, you know, it's interesting to go back to some general episode stuff. So Moffat's on record, right? He says, we're not going to do the crazy arcs that weave in and out of every single story every time this year. We're going to do more standalone episodes. We're going to make everything feel like its own mini movie, and we want, you know, to just make everything blow out. So we want every single episode to just be fantastic, which is good. Yeah, I aim for that. And I don't know if you saw, but they released some of these different posters kind of for each episode, almost like movie premieres, you know? And that was pretty neat. So this definitely had a different feel to it. It had almost like a horror movie meets sad romance kind of feel to it. And, you know, the Daleks themselves were super ominous and everything. But before we get into specifics, to your point, there absolutely is a theme. There is. And it was dropped at the very end of the last season, and it was picked up at the very end of this episode, you know? And that's the fact that he wants everybody to forget.
Yes.
And now his arch nemesis has forgotten him completely.
Yeah.
Which is unprecedented. I mean, these guys have been battling out 40 years our time, you know, 900 years their time, whatever it is. And that's insane. Like, people have been saying, well, they're boring. What do you do to revamp them? What do you do this? What do you do that? Whine, whine, whine. And now he comes in and he goes, okay, well, you can tell they're back at pretty much full strength. They have this whole fleet. And they have no idea who the doctor is.
Which is brilliant. It's absolutely a brilliant twist. You know, they don't know who he is. Their memory, their collective memory, has been wiped clean of his existence.
So what they do is, that I found really interesting, is they say that the Daleks have gotten stronger and worse and all kinds of stuff because of their hatred for the doctor. And that's kind of why he wants to go hidden. You know, he wants to pretend to be dead. He thinks he got too big, and he thinks he's, you know, he's creating more harm than he's doing good. And there's a big argument against that, of course. There's a big argument for that. Well, you know, whether or not a hero should ever apologize and whatever. But but more to the point, I think what we're going to see, and this is my opinion, that he's going to continue to strive to do that and remain anonymous and get back out of the universal spotlight.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And I think there's going to be some serious ramifications here. I don't think we've seen the last of the Daleks. And I think there's going to be a lot at play where, okay, well, you're doing that and people think you're dead and you know, nobody thinks you're doing anything anymore. But what happens when they think the doctor's gone for good? What happens with a universe where the doctor isn't around to save it and people and bad guys and whatever think they can do whatever they want whenever they want to do it? See, to me, that's fascinating. And if that is where Moffat's going with, you know, leading into the next season part two of this season or the 50th anniversary next year, which is supposedly going to be a series of specials, then that's fascinating. Leading up to the question of, you know, Doctor Who, the question that can never be answered.
Right.
You know, or else all kinds of bad things happen. So I think it's very telling that we saw that at the end here, even with him dancing around and saying his own name, or not his name, but asking the question.
Yep. I really think you're onto something there, because he wants to kind of stay stay out of the limelight, or get back out of that limelight. And when he does kind of get much more, I don't want to say personal, but when he gets into a smaller scale, he can't fix things that are in a smaller scale. He can't fix Amy and Rory, because, you know, a human relationship, even though it's a grand thing, it really is two people, right? It's one of the smallest scale, you know, types of events out there, as opposed to a giant asylum that is about to be destroyed with, you know, potentially millions or billions of beings on there. He's completely able to overcome issues and resolve that. But again, you can't resolve the small things, which is what he kind of wants to reposition himself as, not this, you know, not kind of invisible to the universe, I guess you could say. So it's going to be interesting to see how that unfolds this season.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I think that there's definitely that, regardless of what Moffat says. I think he lies. I think he lies straight up.
Thankfully.
Like the doctor lies.
Thankfully.
And, you know, it might not dominate every episode, but I think I will be shocked if there's not a reference to this Doctor Who, you know, who is the doctor kind of, you know, anonymous theme in pretty much every episode moving forward in some way, shape, or form, either forgetting or whatever.
Consider it like the Bad Wolf in season one and on, where it was mentioned in some way or another. You don't realize that the episodes are all linked together, but in the end, you come to find out that Bad Wolf is, you know, what it ends up being. So one thing I did want to mention, this idea, this episode kind of centering on the Daleks to almost three completely different extremes. So you have the insane Daleks, the ultimate evil, you know, the evilest of the evil, insane Daleks. Then you have the Daleks that we've come to know, who have they have their memory essentially wiped clean of the doctor. And then you have this humanized Dalek, the only good Dalek ever created. They had tried to kind of fix the Daleks or get sympathy from the Daleks. I even think there was an episode in the past where one of the Daleks kind of turned on its own kind, but yet wasn't a good Dalek. But I want to kind of throw out there real quickly the this idea of a good Dalek. Actually, I mean, it's been in a series for so long, but there's a graphic novel published, I think it was 2010, a Doctor Who graphic novel in 2010 that it was called The Only Good Dalek, and it stars Amy and the doctor kind of crash landing onto Station 7, which is it's kind of a secret establishment in all of – or the most secret establishment in all of Earth space. Kind of like our Area 51 now is their Station 7. I mean, people that fly past it don't even know it exists. It's beyond being top secret. And it's meant to be that way so that the Daleks can never find it, because the people on here have been doing experiments on Daleks to kind of convert them and see if they can be controlled, create good Daleks.
Is that canon, though?
It may not exactly be canon, but you know, it almost there's enough of the themes in here, I think, that have reappeared throughout the series since then that maybe it's more thematically canon than it actually is plot-wise. Because I don't think any of the books or any of the graphic novels are actually canon, right? The current comics right now have Star Trek and Doctor Who crossing, so I don't think that's canon. But you know, the Daleks end up finding out about the station, and they send a fleet out there. How do they find out? Well, they come to find out that one of the individuals on the station has actually been essentially being controlled by the Daleks, much in the way that the nanogenes were here, and you know, all sorts of things start to happen, where there is you know, it all kind of centers around this one mutated good Dalek, this gene Dalek, or this mutated gene Dalek that they're trying to save, because maybe they can help kind of rebuild the Dalek Dalek civilization with good Daleks, but as is the norm, everything kind of breaks down around it, and you know, everything falls apart, and the Doctor's forced to escape and destroy the Dalek fleet yet again. But this idea, this theme of a good Dalek, kind of comes and goes, and I think this is the first time that we actually saw the full realization of what a good Dalek could be and where a good Dalek could come from. And you know, a good Dalek can only come from a human. It's only
what we saw, if you remember back in the Tenant days, was, and you're absolutely right, it can only come from a human. They spliced the genes with the humans that were building the Empire State Building.
Yes.
And then they were basically unclean and impure, and they hated it. And because it was this weird human Dalek hybrid thing. And it wasn't a very good episode, but I feel like that's the beginning of the themes you're touching on, right?
Yes, yeah.
And even way back in Eccleston, when the first Dalek showed up, and then Rose touched it, and it started taking some of Rose's essence, and, and it wound up destroying itself, or the sun, I don't know, something hit it and it died. And you see that where you're absolutely right. You've got this Dalek army back because Doctor couldn't stop them two years ago, and when they visited Churchill or whatever. And there's this converted human. Now, by the way, sidebar, have they always been able to do that? Have they always been able to put a human in that weird contraption thing and turn him into a Dalek?
You know,
I'm not super savvy on the old episodes, but it felt very Borg-like to me.
I kind of agree with you. Yeah, I couldn't tell you. I can't remember. I'll have to dig that up post-show. If anybody who's listening knows, feel free to leave it in the comments.
Yeah. Would love to know. So, but anyway, so yes, like you said, they basically assimilate this girl, this super genius human girl, who, by the way, we're going to have to talk about because it's a big deal she showed up already.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll circle back to that. And yeah, so she creates this mental projection of herself because she's so smart and because she can't deal with the horror of what happened to her. And that's just – I mean, I've always found the Borg fascinating. I've always found these kind of species that basically take over others very – terrifying but also fascinating from a scientific standpoint. And now that I know the Daleks can do that, I found the whole story very sad, scary, fascinating, a little confusing, but again, just because I didn't know that they could do that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and it's also interesting. Was she projecting? It raises like a question, like, okay, so
yeah,
she was a Dalek the whole time that they found her.
Mm-hmm.
Was she projecting a human voice through all the different microphones and tech equipment before the Doctor was in the room with her? Because she sounded like a human. Rory, Amy, the Doctor, they all heard a human voice, you know?
You know, it's what's interesting is I think because she knew to hack everything, I think she was able to kind of utilize that to showcase, you know, to come off as a human. Obviously, the Borg like Daleks that were converted humans still could, you know, carried their human voices. So I think that still has something to do with it. She hadn't quite converted yet. Maybe it's only through you know, when she's plugged in that her voice is human, but obviously coming from like the speakers of the Dalek, maybe they're, it's almost like their voices are modulated.
I mean, it's not a big deal at all.
Yeah, no, I would say it's an interesting point. Sometimes,
and that was something that I thought about the whole time. Yes, but overall, it was very interesting because you have that story, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the story of the human trapped inside the machine without even knowing it's a machine, but being so powerful and ultimately being able to control itself. And I feel like between that and the Amy Rory stuff, which we should touch on, is the Daleks, which were hyped in this episode, you know, almost kind of took a back seat compared to what I think a lot of us were expecting to happen when we heard every single Dalek that's ever been on Doctor Who is going to be on there. And it's, you know, they're all going to be blah, blah, blah. And the Daleks from the 70s and 80s and the ones you only saw in that one episode that one time.
Yeah.
And then we see most of them. And when the Doctor's going through the really heart of the asylum and there's all these callbacks to all these specific Dalek stories, that's a really nice touch. That the ones that survive their battles with him.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, it's interesting, but I feel like overall, this wasn't a Dalek story at all. Yeah, it was creepy. Yeah, they managed to really successfully put some fear back into these things. But overall, this was definitely a story about, you know, humanity, about Amy and Rory, and about what I guess is going to be the next companion. I don't really know how it's going to work yet. I don't know if there's going to be some timey-wimey stuff involved, but... But that girl, that Oswin, that's the actress that plays the next companion.
Yeah,
like, that's confirmed. That's who that is.
I think so. That's pretty amazing.
So we've just met and watched die the Doctor's next best friend.
I think that's pretty amazing. It almost reminds me of the River Song. You know, the first time we met her is when she dies, because she sacrifices herself also for the Doctor. And in this case, what I find interesting is this girl doesn't know who the Doctor is, right? So she's becoming a converted Dalek who doesn't know who the Doctor is. Wait a minute. This is where the wheels start turning. Maybe she's transplanted out of time onto the asylum post the brain wiping of the Daleks. And so, you know, maybe there's some point where she, you know, her memory is wiped as well. I don't know, it's kind of all over the place, but I'm really interested to see how she gets introduced and how she actually ends up forgetting about the Doctor.
Yeah, I mean, unless there was some way to, I mean, I don't even know. I don't even know. Does he transplant? I don't know. That's what's brilliant, is that even when you have a story that would have just been okay, then you sit there and you realize, well, actually, this is huge, and this has huge future implications, and Moffat does it again.
Yeah. Yep.
And we just don't know. We don't know if he's going to go forward in time. We don't know if it's going to happen, you know, after the asylum. We can't. I mean, time can be rewritten, right?
Right. Right.
But let's say he rescues her from her crashed ship before this all happens. Then what does that mean for everything that we just saw? I mean, it still has to happen, right? Like, it's just crazy. It's absolutely crazy. Maybe there's a way he can get in there, like you said, before it explodes, and maybe there's a transfer of consciousness. I don't know. But it's going to be really cool to look forward to. I know that.
It's
I know that the Chris, because she's supposed to debut with the Christmas special,
yes,
right?
So yeah.
And I mean, of course, we're going to watch either way. But
right.
I feel like there's a lot of, well, I'll watch the Christmas special because it's Doctor Who, because it'll be an okay story, and because we haven't had Doctor Who in a couple months. But this is something where if that's when she does show up, I'm glued. Like, I want to see that. I want to see that now almost as much as I want to see Angels Take Manhattan and all this other stuff.
And dinosaurs on an airplane. This whole season has, I think this whole season has the potential to be one of the best kind of action-packed sci-fi seasons of any TV show, at least in recent memory, because of the way they're building up these episodes. Every episode is a movie, right? They've created the posters for them. It's almost like these are the Doctor Who movies that you've always wanted, that are just full of everything that's great about Doctor Who, everything you always find questionable, all the continuity you're always trying to figure out. But it's all there. It's all smack dab in the one episode. And obviously, the actress who's going to play the Doctor's next companion leaked well ahead of time, which had to be announced when she signed the contract. So having her in this first episode, Moffat knew that people would already know who the next companion is, but seeing her in this situation, you know, it comes
and
off.
Nobody leaked it. Yeah, nobody leaked this at all. I had no idea. I never heard anything. There was no whispers, nothing. It was perfect. Mm-hmm. He kept a lid on it. All the critics kept a lid on it. It was fantastic. Absolutely fantastic.
That's why I really think this episode is, it's almost like it's much more adult than previous episodes. Definitely much more thought-provoking as to how he's, A, going to pull things off, B, how he's wrap up some of the storylines, the Amy storyline.
Oh, it's absolutely more, I mean, yeah. Well.
But, I mean, think of it this way. It's the exploration of who the Daleks are, kind of the building up of the Dalek character in this episode alone shows that there's, the Daleks aren't just this, they're not just this one creation, not just a carbon copy of each individual robot. You know, it's not, they're not a sea of the same robot, because in the asylum, you see Daleks from all of the Doctor's battles. You see some of the craziest Daleks, you see some newer Daleks from more recent seasons. They're all there. So not only that, but then you see the creation of new Daleks from humans, Dalek cyborgs. You see everything about the Daleks. And I think that's, to me, that's really fascinating to say, hey, this is a celebration of the Daleks as the Doctor's greatest enemy. And yet all of a sudden we are wiping the slate clean with them by obviously wiping out their memories.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And it had to be done, you know. But the funny thing is, I would have never thought about doing it that way.
Right.
I would have never, never, ever, ever, ever thought about it. And that's great. That's really, really, it's really well done stuff. You know, like I said, it's not perfect. But to get back to your point a little bit, the thing that a lot of people love about the show is it's obvious. They say it's a kid's show, and I get that. That's mm-hmm. fine. I feel like this season isn't off to as much of a storybook style as the last
right.
or 2 years ago was, or however you want to describe last year. But I feel like there's definitely, so it's, you know, you kids can enjoy it, but obviously adults get a lot out of it too. And that's mm-hmm. what makes it so great. But I mean, now you're talking about a marriage that failed because of what happened at Demon's Run. You're talking about, you know, like all of this stuff was just, it's some heavy stuff in there. There was some heavy stuff. And when Rory and Amy had their moment, right, near the teleport, when Rory, who many times has been kind of the voice of the audience, basically straight up says, hey, it's pretty obvious our relationship has always been where I've cared more about you than you've cared about me. And you just sit there. I don't know about you, but I sat there and I was like, oh, holy yeah. crap. Like, that's pretty much spot on. People always say that.
Yep.
Of course, you know, it's not true, but it's always felt that way because he was going after Amy and Amy was going after the Doctor and on adventures and whatever.
Yep. It was kind of there's definitely a lot of adult themes within this episode, and I'm hopeful that it'll become a that, you know, it will continue on throughout the season. And I'm actually really excited about this season because there's no way to predict what's going to happen this year. Obviously, we know the pawns are disappearing, but which is obviously going to be a huge point. But there's the potential for so many weird and wacky and awesome turns to take place this year that it's going to be, in my opinion, it seems like it might be a really fun, absolutely fun season to watch. So,
well,
I'm
the
excited.
Potential is definitely there for it to be
yep.
one of the best.
Yeah,
you know, and it's off to a good start.
Yep.
Again, some weird. Again, maybe it's just weird to me. Some weird Dalek stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I would have liked to have seen a little more from them. A little more focus mm-hmm. on the diversity, like you were talking about. I would have liked to have seen these different Daleks, you know, in action, like was hyped up to be. But I mean, that happens, right? I mean,
right, right.
excuse me. Like when we had Let's Kill Hitler. Well, we mm-hmm. get Hitler for like 2 minutes in the episode, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like he does that. He does that with these titles and this hype and this buildup and everything. And he's very good at it. And so I personally knock some points for that. But when, you know, when I factor in Pond Life and the obviously buildup to that, and then I see how that's executed with the armband and then Amy and Rory's face-to-face. And yeah, it does feel a little rushed at the end when they go back in the house together and they're going to try again and whatever. But,
mm-hmm.
but you know, I was on the edge of my seat. And when they had that tearful realization where she can't have kids.
that was pretty heavy.
And she didn't kick him out because she yeah. didn't love him, but because, you know, she was letting him go. I mean, that's huge.
Mm-hmm,
that's huge.
Mm-hmm.
And there's that theme of self-sacrifice again, right?
Yep.
you know, we see it with Oswin. We see it with Amy. Amy's letting Rory go because she thinks he can do better because he wants kids and he's wanted kids since he was a kid. And it's just like, where is that coming from?
Right.
Like, holy crap. And you're sitting there just like, that's just the worst. Because obviously you want them to be happy together, right? We've followed them for 2 years all over the universe, time and space. And you just want them to be happy. Like, they were out, you know? They were out and they were done and they were living their lives. And then because of this stuff with the doctor, because of Demon's Run, because of River Song, or, well, not River Song, but all of that stuff has messed them up possibly forever. And it sucks. And that's just huge. And that's, again, yet another one of those threads of implication. Like, okay, they've got four episodes left, right? We've got four episodes with the Ponds, which is kind of sad. But, you know, where are they going to go? Like, why next week? Why, or I guess tomorrow, why are they going to get in the TARDIS again? You know, he lets them go. He sends them home. They didn't stay on the TARDIS and go around and try to find dinosaurs on a spaceship, you know? So I'm very curious how they're going to get together in the next four episodes. And I was anxious before. Now I'm downright terrified of what's going to happen to them in that final episode. You know, I mean, we know how the Weeping Angels work and we know the potential there.
Yep.
And now you see them going through all these struggles for so long and you just want them to be happy. And we can see, like, I can see what's coming down the road and I see them doing these individual battles now. And I love their story. I really do. But it fills me with, like, both happiness and terror. If that makes sense.
Oh yeah, totally, yeah. Totally. I mean, they have a love story that it has really kind of transcended time and space. I mean, you have Rory who stayed, you know, protecting a box for over 2,000 years. You had Amy who had aged and died on several occasions and sacrificed herself for Rory's protection and Rory's safety. So, and of course they've had and lost a child together, and so it's really kind of powerful. And I'm with you. I kind of fell in love with the couple, but it's going to be so hard to let them go. And the way that they go, it's going to be I don't know if they'll ever be able to do it proper justice, just with how kind of attached we've become to these two characters. Because you're right, there's only
it'll four, be hard.
It'll there's
be
only
really hard.
Four episodes left with them. And we really don't know what's going to happen these next four episodes. But hopefully, next week's episode or this weekend's episode, Dinosaurs on a Spaceship, which may be my favorite title for a TV episode of all time.
Over Let's Kill Hitler, huh?
I think it's Over Let's Kill Hitler, yeah. I grew up with being a huge fan of dinosaurs. I actually was going to be a paleontologist.
Every kid grew up being a huge fan
Well,
of dinosaurs.
I was on the cusp. I had applied to be a paleontologist, go to like school, archaeology, and paleontology, and so forth.
Look at you.
Yeah, and then I said, oh, I realized there's no money in there unless you're really famous and you get, you know, obviously scientific grants and all that kind of stuff. So I went into car design and games. But yeah, that episode is this weekend. Hopefully you are listening to this podcast before then. I'm sure you are. They gotta be. I'll be publicizing.
Timey-wimey hijinks.
Yeah. Exactly.
Wibbly-wobbly.
Wibbly-wobbly.
I feel like it's in my Lonely TARDIS contract that I have to say wibbly-wobbly at least once per episode.
And so we'll get together after that episode and continue the awesome conversation, hopefully with Steven in tow. He could be here tonight to join us. He had some of his own timey-wimey, wibbly-wobbly things to do. There it is. But he does promise he'll be back next episode when we discuss dinosaurs in a spaceship. Until then, we're going to sign off.
Let's do this, Dolly. Before we sign off, let's do this. Overall, scale of 1 to 5 TARDISes. No, scale of 1 to 5 Daleks.
1 to 5, all right.
How would you rate the episode?
I'm going to give it a 4. I'm going to give it 4 Daleks. In the end, I really enjoyed it. I loved it as a singular episode, but I love what it set up for the rest of the season. And yourself?
You know, I think I'm in the 4 range. I was about 4.5 Daleks, about a Dalek and a 4 Daleks and a Dalek stalk there.
There you go.
No, you know, the more I think about it, there was a lot I did like, but there was some stuff that I felt could have been done a little better. So, I'm with you on that. I think 4 Daleks is a good one for this one, and I think we're off to a really good start. You know, there's no sign of any fatigue. There's no sign that the show is going to hit any sort of rut anytime soon. All the actors are on point. All the writing is on point. I think we're in for a heck of a season. The only thing that really bums me out is it's going to be short before the break.
Yeah.
You know, four more episodes or whatever it is, and then we got that break again. I feel like we just got back together.
Well, we are going to keep going because obviously there's a lot of things we can do with Doctor Who now with all the graphic novels, all the books coming up. Maybe we'll talk about some of the audiobooks as well. Yeah. Which could be a lot of fun because they do get some voice actors as well to chime in on those. So there's plenty of good things to do. We will have the website up here shortly, the dedicated LonelyTARDIS.com website, and where you can find all of us. Yep. Maybe we'll set up like a little mini web forum there, or we'll link it to Reddit or something and get them involved too. But yeah, I'm pretty excited. It's a whole new season. It's been an awesome start. It was a long time coming, but I mean, I even rewatched all of seasons 5 and 6 in preparation, and replayed those silly Doctor Who specials that BBC America was running. You know, the science of Doctor Who, the women of Doctor Who. I've watched those on several occasions.
The hiatus is,
yeah.
The hiatus is just you got to get in there.
You got to get in there. So. That's it for this week. That's it.
Yeah.
For this
a little bit of a shorter end, although some people might find this long already. But no, it's good to be back, and we'll definitely be doing this consistently every week. And looking forward to getting, you know, more people involved, talking some questions, maybe doing some giveaways again.
Yes.
And expanding the the TARDIS. And
that's right.
We'll get Steven back next week, and we'll start getting guests rotating in here again, and we'll do it proper. So
we have room
it's good to be talking to you, Dolly, of course.
Yeah, we have room because the TARDIS is bigger on the inside.
Yes, it is.
And with that, again, yeah, thank you, Sean. It's always great to chat with you, my good friend. We are companions of the Doctor. You're Sean Norton. I'm Dolly Domofsky. You can find you at Sean Norton on Twitter. You can find me at Cool Rats on Twitter until I decide to change it. I haven't decided what it's going to be yet, but I'm definitely thinking of changing my Twitter handle. Of course, that does usually mean everywhere my Twitter handle is located online, I now would have to change it and get all new business cards made, but maybe that's a sacrifice I'm willing to take. But we'll think about that when the time comes, because I'm ready.
Now everybody knows it.
Now that everybody knows it, I'm ready to get.
Everybody's going to sympathize.
I'm just ready to watch more Doctor Who. Maybe I'll play that great Doctor Who video game that came out last year.
Yeah,
earlier
we
this
talk
year.
Talk about that sometime too.
Should we talk about that?
Yeah,
I don't know if I really want to talk.
We'll see.
We'll gloss over it. Maybe we'll gloss over it. But thank you, Sean.
Hey, Dolly, pleasure as always, and everybody else. We'll see you soon.
Thank you, and please rate us on iTunes. Share it. Tell your friends. Everybody listen, because we're going to have a lot of great things happening this season on The Lonely TARDIS.
TARDIS.
TARDIS. TARDIS.